This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
The following program contains content of a sexual nature and coarse language. Listener discretion is advised. That's right, it is Moist Mondays here on Joy 94.9. Thank you again to my beautiful purple boys and their very special purple girl in the studio tonight, Lana. It was lovely to hear. It was a fabulous show, as always. Now, we are doing, as every week we do, something very, very different. And this week we're taking an interesting stroll down the history and the lane of sex work for women. Now, my very special guest and my co-host for this evening, Helena, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's so wonderful. Now, I've been chasing you. We've been trying to get dates together for ages, and it's so wonderful to finally have you in the studio. So you have been working as a sex worker for over 10 years now, but I think I would love to be able to start off by, you know, a bit of your history, you know, how you started out and, you know, the travels that you've traveled yourself.
Yeah, great. So, yeah, I've been a sex worker for over 10 years and I began my sex worker journey in London and I worked as a spanky in London, which is a job description that you don't really have here in Australia. So it's a very English kink. I think it was Napoleon that said it was the English vice, spanking. So it's a massive fetish and kink over there. And so it's a distinguished from the BDSM scene in that spanking and corporal punishment is kind of all that happens, and it's in a domestic setting rather than in the leather and PVC and dark and, you know, all of that kind of world. So it's secretary and schoolgirl and doctor and nurse and domestic type role plays. So
not as much as we would envision if we went and engaged someone as a professional dom for a spanking here in Australia. We would be expecting to possibly walk into a fully working dungeon.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it's totally different to that. And in actual fact, the clients that when I refer to the spanking scene in London, the most of the clients, not only would they not enjoy a dungeon environment, but it's anti their kink. It's opposite what they want.
Okay.
So they don't want that darkness and all of, and it's a different power dynamic as well. So it's a funny little professional scene that's big in England and really big in America. And so I would travel to America and attend spanking parties, which is why we've had so much trouble catching up.
You have been so busy.
Yes, I know, traveling around.
Vegas and everything, wasn't it?
Sorry?
You were Vegas and
I was in Vegas for a massive spanking party over in Vegas. And
so, you know, okay, take a step back for a sec. Spanking party.
Yeah, I know.
Is that like you have, you know, all of these bottoms that you can just walk around and spank, you know?
With lots of consent.
For listeners that have never, of course. You must have to almost sign a consent form when you walk in the door.
Absolutely. But, I mean, people are very well behaved because, you know, you don't want to be kicked out of the one place that you can indulge your kink. So, as a general rule, they're very behaved. And although it's a funny world in that it's so different to what we would know as a BDSM party, where sexiness and sexual activities, and there's so many different activities going on. This is just spanking and caning and maybe like paddles and, but you know, traditional, like even floggers aren't that common. It's more that traditional implements. And And, you know, my friend Pandora, who runs a porn site called Dreams of Spanking, she and I were playing a lot and we kept getting into trouble for being too erotic, you know, and being, oh, take it to the rooms, girls, and, you know, things like that.
Wow.
So, yeah. So it's kind of this funny straight world. But so in America, the spanking parties are enthusiasts, so people who are enthusiasts, and they pay to go to a party, and it's usually in a casino. In Vegas, or there's another one in Atlantic City, and it's in a casino, and we hire out rooms, floors, and then the suites are play parties. So in the evenings after the main events, whether it's a market or we went on a spanking cruise, like on a boat in the harbour in Atlantic City, you know, all these funny things.
Awesome.
Then everybody kind of relaxes and goes up into the suites and spanks each other. So it's really, really fun. Yeah. So, I mean, I could talk a lot about spanking, but it's not the only form of sex work I've done.
But it is sort of where you started.
It is
really
where I started. Yeah. Yeah. And it's very, you know, there's not really any sexual content as you might imagine it. So it's very sexy, you know, however, there's no touching of genitals or masturbation or, you know, penetrative sex, unlike maybe the BDSM world where there's a lot more of that. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
So for you, with just starting out, working as a spanky.
Yes. Spanker, spanko, you know, it's always a tough one, that spanking model. There's all these words. Yeah.
What happens, you know, at the very start with being having a non-sexual type of sex worker start?
Yeah.
When, you know, the client then said to you, yeah, you know, well, okay, we want to take this further?
Yeah.
Is that something that what led you into actually working sort of, you know, further into sex work?
No, not at all. No, they generally wouldn't ask that question. It's, again, interesting that it's not their kink. I people find that really strange, you know, because it is sexy, yeah? So it is, it's not that it's not about sex. Of course it is. It's sexual and it's, but it's, I think what it is if they're watching spanking porn, do you know, then they might be masturbating to the spanking porn. But when they play, but there's no sex in the porn. So when they place themselves in the porn, they act out the porn and there's no sex.
Okay.
Do you know, there's
yep.
no, mm-hmm. yeah. So that's sort of how I like to think about it. But no, that's a very, I have a brand. My brand in spanking is Zoe Montana. And that's a very straight, you know, brand, I suppose. And Lelina May is really naughty and does all sorts of other interesting things. And I think sometimes that, like, my clients who've known me for, like, 11, 12 years would just die if they knew that I was now, like, fisting people and, you know, like, doing the things I do now. They'd be, oh, goodness.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that you? Exactly. Oh, my God.
But she was so sweet. How did that happen? So.
Were you ever that sweet?
Well,
you are sweet, but you know, like there's sweet and there's
no
sweet.
No, never. No, that was all the part of the brand, really, isn't it? Like, oh no, I was, my private life was very much in dungeons and fetish clubs, and that's my community and was my community in London for many years, especially And then my professional work was this spanking, you know, which is domestic and different. So it was a nice distinction for when I was really young. I was really privileged to never be pushed. But I think your question was, like, how did I then progress into other types of sex work? And I think kind of a bit of boredom, you know, doing the same thing. It really is a very repetitive job. I still love it today, but it is... I love it now because I do it more rarely, and I do all sorts of other interesting things. And I guess I just got older and I developed my own skills in my private life within the fetish industry, and so felt that I had something else to start offering people. And I started by using that same model rather than kind of being this mistress in a dungeon that you had to know everything and somebody would come and ask you something and you're like, oh, their skill is incredible. I used this spanking model that I'd already done and really kind of started advertising for very small things, niche fetishes,
yep.
and kind of becoming specialised in a few different things. And then that grew until I came to Australia, where I was lucky enough to work in Salon Kitties before it closed down in Sydney, which is just so sad that that place is gone. It's such a worldwide institution. And so I was working as a dominatrix and a submissive there, and that was really, really fun. And then I just got tired of fetish in a way. Like,
do you think it was because it was it was such an important and positive part of your personal life that you felt that maybe it was becoming too much? Your personal life in the fetish scene was becoming too much like work.
Do you know, possibly, but I think that it's actually a very tiring job. It's very exciting, there's all these great things, but it had been a long time. I've been doing this for a really long time. And so I think two things happened. One was that I wanted a break, and moving into sort of standard sex work, you know, mainstream sex work, just felt like a bit of a break as well, and something new and exciting. I'd never done that before, and I was so nervous when I walked into a brothel. Yeah, I was so nervous, and I'd been a sex worker for about 7 years, and I walked into a brothel and was like, I'm new, but I'm not, but I am, but I'm not. You know, it was just like crazy. I didn't want to lie and pretend I was new, but I felt new, you know, and I wanted to be looked after a little bit, which I was.
Yeah.
And I did my first shift, and it was really exciting, and I had a year working in different brothels in New South Wales, in the country, in Sydney, and here in Melbourne as well. And it was a really excellent experience. And now I'm, you know, me now doing everything, everything and anything.
Does it, it makes that, you know, the difference for you to, I suppose, you know, over 10 years on to be able to sort of take the bits that have worked for you over the years and into the model that you now have.
Exactly. And I think that that's the thing, is that this is where I feel like I am right now. And, you know, my website's coming out in the next few weeks, and I feel like what's happened is I've worked in I've followed other people's models, you know, and they've been great, and I've learned, and I've done all different things in different aspects and areas of the sex industry. And now I've formed myself, do you know, and what I enjoy doing and how I enjoy doing that. And I really enjoy working with women of all shapes and sizes and everything.
We are going to get a little bit more into that. And also we're going to get into a little bit more with Helena about, you know, the questions that you would ask if you want to have a conversation with a sex worker about engaging their services and what sort of services that you can expect.
Yeah.
We're going to have a quick listen to some messages, and we'll be right back on The Wet Spot on Joy. Joy 94.9. It is Moist Mondays. I'm all excited in The Wet Spot because I'm so excited to finally have Helena in the studios with me as we talk all things about queer sex work for women and, of course, about her own personal journey into this amazing industry. Now, just like we've had a couple of messages in, the listener asks, which we'll there's two parts, so we'll go through both of them. Please ask your guest what she thinks of the sex party and the representation in government. And also, they also say, interesting conversation, what percentage is a business clientele? So I'm assuming they must mean from a professional business corporate point of view, possibly.
Yeah. I think the Australian sex party is absolutely fabulous. And but, you know, I'm actually relatively new to Australia. I've spent all of my 20s overseas, you know, so but everything I've read about them, I just love them. I think they're fabulous, and I hope everybody votes for them. They certainly have my vote. And also Fiona Patten is just what a fabulous leader of the, you know, of the party. We're so lucky to have her and the work that she does.
Just extraordinary. And, you know, head of the Eros Foundation, and the amount of work and advocacy she does for sex workers and for everybody within the adult sex industry is extraordinary.
It seems to be really extraordinary. And next year, I'm hoping to spend much, much more time in Australia. I've been out of Australia a lot this year, and I want to volunteer. Yeah, absolutely. I want to throw my Yep, whatever I've got, volunteer for them there. Yeah, they're great.
Now, don't forget, you can. We would love for you to message us as well through those numbers that we just gave. Now, just before the break, we were having a little bit of a chat sort of about your own sort of personal journey into sex work. Yep. Now, one of the things I wanted to sort of, you know, ask you was the differences that you found not moving from the kink and fetish world in sex work to mainstream sex work, but also just mainly working sort of, you know, in different... you know, different brothels and different areas and, you know, the expectations, you know, the clientele, you know, for women being able to come in and sort of, you know, into brothels because you know, would naturally assume it would just be a steady stream of men. So, you know, how was that sort of for you with the women clientele?
Yeah. I mean, I guess moving into the mainstream, I've never really been in the mainstream, like, ever in my life. Yep. You know, as a teenager, I certainly... came out as queer very, very young. And so for me, actually, it was a really interesting exposure to mainstream culture, do you know, and to my own culture. Like I said, I'd been out of Australia for 10 years. So kind of coming back and experiencing Australians and that sort of thing. And I was actually often a little bit shocked at the lack of knowledge around sex and sexuality within brothels and brothel cultures and how little training and education that there is.
Yep.
And since that experience, I've gone on to study sexological bodywork and really invest in my own education. And I think that that's really inspired me to do that. So I was a little bit, you know, I can't lie. Like sometimes women would come in and I would be quite shocked at the reaction of the girls.
Because there was a woman there asking
because they're so often not catered for, do you know?
Yep.
So for people living in Melbourne, we're very, very lucky that Collingwood Confidential is a brothel in Melbourne where a ridiculous number of the girls love being with girls, do you know, genuinely just adore it. So that would be a really good place to go. And Manhattan Terrace. And I'm sure there are others. They're just the ones that I know about personally.
Yep.
But I feel that dungeons would be are a much more welcoming space for women. And you just have a higher strike rate in terms of coming in as a woman and wanting sex or whatever it is that they want, you know. I think it's hard just walking into a brothel. You might find nobody, you might find one person. Do you know, you don't have the choice, unfortunately, that men do.
Well, that's right. And I suppose, you know, quite often, you know, as you said, if it's an industry that is still, you know, can be quite uneducated into the wants and needs of the women the women clientele.
Yeah.
And as you said, you know, the experiences that you've had, you know, what would you recommend for women to be the first thing that they would say if they were walking into a brothel for them to be able to say to the woman, the man, whatever on the front desk about the sort of questions that you would like to have been asked as a sex worker by a client.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think brothels, I mean, to be honest, apart from the fact that I know that they would get a great service at Collingwood Confidential, for example, I really wouldn't recommend brothels as your first, as the first choice, unless that's an environment that you like, you know.
Could be a part of what they want.
Of course. And there's so much about that. Like there's so much about brothels that are exciting and, you know, and the fact that they are so often, you know, for cis men, occupying that space as a client can be really exciting. And so, you know, setting that aside, if there's a lot of nerves and not sure, unless a place has been recommended to you, I would probably say that they would to contact a private person, you know, this is where my Australian knowledge is a bit lacking, but in other countries, there are websites that are specifically set up, you know, for if you're a woman looking for a woman, and you can then peruse lots of different websites. And as I said, my website will be up in a few weeks, and so I'll be doing that research. So I will get back to you on
we can also put it up on the page. But I suppose it's more for, you know, quite often, and this is something we spoke about off air before the show, was, you know, for you, some of the women clients that you have had are women that actually don't identify as queer because, you know, the women would be in straight, what they consider themselves to be, heterosexual, in a marriage, with children, for example. I'm just throwing words out there. And they want their women, female experience. So, you know, quite often, you know, as you said, this, it's something that you've come across.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, a really good section of the cis female clients who I've seen do identify as heterosexual. And there, it is a common story that I've heard in my own experience, but also have heard other workers speak about it as well, is that one of the reasons that they're seeing a sex worker is because they don't know how to pick up a woman, do you know? But it is like a really like a core desire, like, and that they want to experience this experience, but they need some hand holding and they need to be walked through it and some guidance and what better to, you know, come and speak to a sex worker? Yeah.
Do you think that also too, sometimes for the way that women's brains work, quite often they need to have that very strong emotional and sexual connection with somebody to have sex with them, that if they've got to that point that the desire is so strong, they can disconnect themselves and do what we expect the cis male brain to do and say, I am paying you so then I can get myself into this space, is if you're my therapist and say, I would like this, this and this. How would I do this or how would you do this to me?
Yeah. I think that that's really, really accurate. And I think that that's often the perception. Do you know? I mean, for me, kind of the binary of like, this is how women have sex and this is how men have sex or approach sex is not entirely my experience. And I mean, so many cis men need to have an emotional tie and connection and, you know, all of those things. And, you know, there's plenty of women that want to have quick fun.
They want to go out and have a fun.
Right, exactly. So, but where it's useful talking in this language is that I certainly think that we've been socialized to engage in that way and to believe that about ourselves and to need to overcome these hurdles. And certainly cis men have been, you know, socialized to see sex as a commodity and they're able to pay for it and they've been raised that way. And whether that's porn or actual physical sex or going and seeing a stripper or, you know, any of these services, they have an understanding of them that we're not necessarily raised to have. And so all of that needs to be understood.
It's like our brains, as quite often as women, or, you know, even if we are, even as our trans and our sisters, that, you know, their brains don't identify that way. So it's almost we've deprogrammed that part of our brains to say we don't have the right to talk about sex. We don't have the right to tell you what we want for sex or to ask for it in our own language, the way that we understand.
Yes, we don't have that entitlement, you know, to sex. And a lot of the women, the cis women that I've seen over the years are very embarrassed that they're paying for sex, you know, and really, really, really struggling with the fact that they're doing that. And you know, most of them get over it, I guess, and move through that is probably a much nicer way of saying that. And they move through those feelings, and then it's a service like any other, you know, where they get to discover and explore themselves and in a space that's really well boundaried, you know, and as supportive as we can possibly make it for them.
That's right. And I think one of the things that I think that, you know, for me, I find so empowering about you is for you as a queer sex worker is it hasn't just been about cisgendered women. It has been about, if you know, it doesn't matter how these women, how women identify.
Oh, goodness me, no. They, or what genitals they have.
That's right. Yeah. Bi, trans, intersex women all deserve and respect and need. Yeah. The same, exactly the same service and the same amount of respect.
Yeah.
And for you as a sex worker to be able to say, this is how you identify and this is who you are.
And
I'm
even
here for you.
Exactly. And even in the moment, you know, I have a lot of trans clients and have had over the years. And I see a very large number of cis men who cross-dress, you know, and that's one of my specialties because I just love gender bending, whether that's me or them or, you know, I really, I love that so much. And I, And so for me, I have a 2 to 3 hour session where, a male bodied person will come and then transform into the woman that they want to be. And sometimes that's, slutty, and sometimes that's very prim and proper, and, it's all these characters and all these stereotypes, and it's just beautiful. And for me, they are a woman in that time, absolutely and completely, because that's who they believe themselves to be and that's who they're stepping into. And I know that there's probably quite a lot of controversy around that, but my experience of that situation is that I'm with a woman.
Well, I mean, we talk about our trans sisters, that showing them the respect about how they identify, whether you're having a coffee with them or you're having sex with them.
Exactly.
It's still the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And so, sometimes it's BDSM, or it's I do so many different activities with different people, but more and more I'm having, lesbian sex with a crossdresser, and it's so much fun. Like, it's so much fun. Yeah.
That's right. Who knew? Well, you did, because you're listening to Joy 94.9 in the wet spot this evening with Helena and Sammy, as just covering every subject known to man. Well, of course, we are known to woman, known to everybody. Doesn't matter how you identify. As long as you're a woman that likes to fuck women, come and play. The boys play too. They just watch. Now, we've been having a really wonderful conversation about your history, the way that you sort of, the way yourself really have evolved sort of, through queer sex work, and, the things that you have, experienced and witnessed over the years of being able to do it. And we sort of started to sort of touch a little bit on the services that women can sort of feel that can be available
and
to them.
And how to ask,
So some of the sort of questions, is there anything that, that's really important first questions, if you have found either through a recommendation of somebody else or you have, got the courage up to call up, you found on the internet.
Or you want to send some emails out, like however you make that first contact I think all the information is great. Like, we just love getting lots of information, and I think that people feel a lot like they don't know what they want to do, and there's a lot of nervousness, and not knowing what to expect. And we get nervous too. Like, that's, we're all humans, and humans sort of, get nervous about these sorts of interactions. And so, I would sit down and really think about what it is that you're wanting to achieve with seeking out a sex worker. And sometimes people come up with, like, I don't know, and that's okay too. And just sort of say that really, really clearly, like, I really don't know what, I'm wanting. But if there's any bit of information is really, really useful. So people often, for example, with me, want to try some kink, and so they're like, I want to try some kink. And it's like, well, kink's a very big subject.
Yeah.
It's like,
do you know how many people there are in China?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so as much as I'm like, yes, I'm also like, how do we narrow this down? So I really do understand and feel really a lot of empathy around that feeling of, like, I don't know. And putting ourselves out there and asking for something when we've never tried it, is really scary as well.
God, yes.
So I really totally understand that. However, there is a way to do both, and that is to say, I saw this thing on a porn, or I heard about this thing and I think I'd really like to try it, but I never have, and I'm really nervous about trying it. And that then gives us something to work with, and I think that's really one of the things that's the most, and it gives us something to talk about. Can kind of break the ice, and also it gives us an opportunity to say, I know somebody who is amazing at that. Yeah, like, absolutely amazing at that. And at the moment, I've never really, really got good with ropes. It's not something that I've, really developed. And whereas gallivanting is amazing with ropes. And we had a rope session together recently, and it was just blew my mind. So if somebody asks me for that, then I will happily, put them onto the person that's the most specialised. Or we can get creative and work together.
I suppose it's also the client being able to say, just because the sex worker that you have contacted says to you, that's great.
Yeah.
I know somebody that's going to be able to work with you more successfully than me. It doesn't mean what you're asking is too kinky.
Oh, no.
Or too strange or too bizarre.
Exactly.
It just means that the sex worker that you have been speaking to is being upfront and honest about the extent of their skills.
And also, we want you to have the best experience.
Well, that's what you're paying for.
Yeah. And it's like, I am so passionate about like everything to do with sex and sexuality, and and also just like removing shame around it. You know, I'm absolutely passionate about that. So I'm not going to tell you I can do something I can't do, because I don't want you to run away and never come back. Mm. You know, and I want you to have an amazing journey. And there are so many incredible sex workers out there who want people to have an amazing journey. So kind of be really aware of that when you send those emails, that we want you to have a really, really good time. And also, a lot of us are pretty well educated, around consent and kink and negotiation. And we've put a lot of time and a lot of effort and a lot of money into our own educations. And so you don't have to know everything. We can hold your hand, and if we can't, we'll let you know and it's fine.
And I suppose it's also sometimes if you don't know exactly what you want,
that's fine.
It can come out in conversations, but it's also, I suppose, you can be a little bit more clear about what your expectations are of the outcome. So how are you want to be able to feel like this at the end.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's probably the thing to be most honest with yourself about.
Yeah, that is so brilliant. Are you a bit kinky?
tiny bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a great tool to use, and that's definitely a question that I would be asking people who are like, oh, I just don't really know. It's like, what is it that you're wanting to achieve? Is it a physical sensation? Mm. Is it a mental state? Is it, where are you sitting? And that's always a great way to do that. And then I can throw suggestions at you, we could spank you, or, we could do this, or we could, and then something will sound intriguing and interesting. Another thing to remember is that once something is started, it can always be stopped.
Yes.
We get asked this question all the time, whether I'm running a workshop or in a session. It's like, if I don't like it, am I allowed to say no? And it's like, of course, we're adults, and, and people are so scared and they're so nervous that once it starts, that it doesn't stop. So, I mean, so many sex workers are really educated. I mean, not all, recommendations are great, but on radical consent, that it's not just the nose, but we're looking at bodies and watching and, seeing and checking in for consent all the time.
That's what I was going to say. It's that constant checking in that we see with out, a lot of people may see out and play, whether it be in the public kink scene or, even just at a nightclub or whatever, is that ongoing consent, which will also happen with a sex worker, is that if something stops feeling good, but you will also be with somebody that will also be checking in to make sure what you're still feeling is good. And we're not just talking about a sex worker within BDSM scene.
Yes.
It's just, even if you just say, as a woman for the first time, I want to see what another vagina looks like.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the best, those lighthearted, can I touch it? Can I just look? Can I just do this?
Can I see what it feels like?
Yeah, exactly. I actually had my first ever strip performance. So for me, stripping is a hard limit. Sometimes people are like, "Will you strip?" Oh no, you do not want to see that. Like, you really do not. And one of my friends is like, "No, I'll teach you. It's like, oh, it just fills me with fear, And I think they do an amazing job. But I've never actually received a strip tease. And I was lucky enough to have one. And it just made me think about it because of this. I had this experience of this permission to look. It was an amazing experience because it was so sexy, and I sat on my hands throughout the whole thing. This beautiful human was just had really long hair and was running her hair over my body and just getting really close to my ear and whispering things, but was also just displaying her body in a way, and I had absolute permission to just sit and look. There was nothing else for me to do, and the power of that was really mind-blowing for me. And so now I'm a real fan of stripping, and I think everyone should go and get an amazing strip tease.
I know, and it's almost like a couple of times, you know, because I've got friends that'll say to me, "I've never been, can you take me?" I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
That's a hardship. Okay. Let me think about that.
Exactly.
Okay.
I know. And they love it. But I think that's also important to just point out, because we've been using this word sex worker. Mm. Yeah. And actually, you know, there are moments where we need to define what that is, because there's all sorts of different types of sex workers.
Exactly.
And, you know, for me, it's really important to always use the word sex worker, because it breaks down the hierarchy, you know, that often is implied that, so it's really important. However, right, this second we're talking about services and different types of services, and there's so many. And, you know, sexological bodywork and body workers is a fairly new field, but it's a fabulous, fabulous, fabulous start for somebody who wants to see a sex worker and is really nervous, and they have some just, and especially with that you mentioned earlier, like kind of the more therapeutic, you know, approach.
Yes.
A sexological body worker can really is trained to hold that space in a way that not all sex workers are, and it's a fabulous course. So that's one type of sex worker, you know, that might be really, really good. Actually, just like hiring a stripper, I think, is a great idea now, you know. Mm. And then there's, you know, the different fetishes and aspects of fetish. And I mean, there's just so many, isn't there? You know, different types of sex workers. So that's another thing to think about, I think, when thinking about hiring a sex worker. What type of sex worker?
That's right. And being able to sort of, I suppose, we're going to have a quick listen to some messages and then we're going to come back. And I suppose it's the first thing, the start of the conversation that you have in your own head before you then have that conversation with the sort of sex worker that you want. And like we said, you know, exactly what you're going to need. And we've also had another message in. Andrea from North Coburg has said, hi, you are so right. Having lived on both sides of the gender binary, women are not afforded the same rights to express themselves sexually.
Yeah. I think that is really, really true.
And can I just say, this is one of my particular bugbears about the discrimination that our trans sisters cop is that, you know, and I've been known to say this and nearly, you know, had a couple of fights out in pubs before, was this woman has given up her straight white man's privilege to live with us girls.
Yes.
And do you know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, you have to break it down in some people's brains when they don't get it.
Yeah.
Because we know we've grown up, you know, with our trans sisters.
Yeah.
So we know about how their brains work. We know about how they identify. But sometimes people need to actually sit there and go.
Yes.
And get it. Just go, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's just, yeah. It's
I think they get a terribly raw deal. And I feel really, really, really sad, which is why I offer massive discounts to trans women.
Hooray!
Massive discounts.
We're going to have a listen to some very quick messages, and then we're going to be right back in the wet spot on Joy.
Listen to us right around the nation. Joy 94.9.
That's right. You are on Joy 94.9 in the wet spot with Sammy and Helena tonight. And we have only got like 10 minutes to go.
It went so quickly. And you've squished my cherry, my radio cherry. So thank you.
Yay. Hooray. Now, we've been having an amazing discussion tonight about, you know, your history within the industry and all of the amazing things that you've achieved. And we've barely even even scratch the surface. Yeah. And I know that, you know, I'm going to haunt you every couple of months and drag you kicking and screaming back into the studio, which I can see you've had a terrible time.
Oh, awful.
Now, you know, I think that it's been really important for us to sort of cover a lot of the things we've covered, you know, particularly about women, to be able to, I suppose, look at the expectations of what they have for themselves, to say that, you know what, if you feel that, you know, for your first time experience, or to, you know, even if it's not your first time, you know, sometimes you can be in between partners, you know, there's only so long you can live without sex.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
And why should you?
Yeah, or touch, even just touch, yeah, you know.
You can actually, you know, engage a sex worker to have, to cuddle you and to stroke your hair and to, you know, you know, like the possibilities are endless, aren't they?
They really are endless. Mm. Yeah, they really, really are endless. And it's just finding the sex worker for you, you know. And I think, like, if somebody was out there looking for a counsellor, it's pretty understood that you might have to try two or three before you find somebody that really gels with you, maybe even more. And I think people understand that. And it's kind of the same with sex workers. So if you don't have a great first experience, I wouldn't be put off, because there's a lot of great sex workers out there, a lot of really great sex workers.
And I think the other thing is for you to be able to not feel bad that if you do contact a sex worker and you do find that you are having an expectation of some sort of chemistry through conversations or whatever, and it's not there, don't feel like that you have to engage that particular sex worker and say, oh, well, you know, I've had a conversation about booking you, so now I have to.
Oh, goodness,
it has to be, because then it's still not going to work for you, is it?
No, no. And I wouldn't want to be in that position. Do you know, like, nobody wants to really entirely be in that position. So we're not going to be offended in any way. And in actual fact, you might find that the sex worker will do that hard work for you, do you know, and maybe say, oh, like, I don't think that this is, you know, working as well as it could. Would you like me to recommend somebody else? Do you know? Yep. And maybe help you along. But of course you do not have to, at any point.
No, absolutely not. And I suppose also, you know, for you, it might even be something as simple. And I was just thinking about it then is, you know, you had a previous partner that maybe suggested something to you or you thought you suggested something to a previous partner.
Yeah.
And she's turned her nose up at you.
Yes.
But you are still really wanted to try it. You want to be, I don't know, let me have a think of something. You want to be fisted.
Yeah.
You want to fist somebody. Yeah. You want to be fucked by a strap-on. Yeah. And a particular partner has said, oh, there's no way.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
exactly.
You know, you have that conversation with a sex worker. There's no reason why you should miss out on any experience that you want because there is a service out there and a sex worker that will suit your particular needs.
Yeah, absolutely. There's just no reason at all. And you know, certainly if somebody approached me, there's things that I can be like, oh, look, I've had loads of experience with that and I feel really confident with that. And there's other things that I'll be like, I would love to do this session with you. I'm not necessarily the expert, do you know, but this is where I'm at on that, because I'm human as well.
Absolutely.
Do you know?
Yep.
And fisting is a great example, actually, which, you know, if somebody approached me and said, I would like to fist you, if I liked them already, and I might say something like, I have lots of experience fisting people, so I understand it all. I have a limited experience receiving it, but I would love to, if you're okay that we're experimenting and knowing where I'm at on it, then we can go ahead with that. And some people really are up for that, and some people are like, no, actually, I want you to be the expert. Great, fine. Then there's this other person that's amazing at that. Mm. So, yeah, there's a lot of honesty, a lot of humanness in it, a lot of just shared time. Yeah.
And again, it's being able to be in touch with what the realistic expectations of that outcome. I want to be able to end this session and be feeling this.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And, you know, that might not happen, and we don't want to necessarily be too attached.
Exactly.
But at the same time, that's a great goal to work towards. And if it doesn't happen, then we can talk about it. Why didn't we achieve that, do you think? Do you know? Mm. And make more suggestions and rework it and see where we're going. And sometimes people have been wanting to experience something It's for years that they haven't, you know, yep. And it's a and it's an opportunity with a sex worker where they're like, actually, once a week for an hour for the next 6 weeks, I want to target this thing, yes. You know, whatever it is,
yep.
And see what we can do. Yeah.
So, you know, I suppose as we start to sort of wind things up, I would love to sort of, for your personal experience, something that sort of, I suppose, touched you as a sex worker with women over the years that, you know, an experience that you've been able to sort of take away, which is what makes you so passionate about doing what you do. Yeah. I know it's putting you on the spot, but you are so incredibly passionate about working with women, regardless of how you know, the genders that they were assigned at birth. It's about how the women and how they identify when they come and see you.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's just so many, and I'm touched so often. Funnily enough, what springs to mind is one of my very first. I had a spanking client who was a woman when I was, very young, like I was 22, 23, and she was a high-powered businesswoman, and she booked me for years, and we had a really long, close relationship for many, many years, and I guess that helped give me my confidence to be who I am. So even though I'm not really answering your question, popped to mind. So I'm just sharing that. And I find thinking about her and how comfortable she was with paying for sex and how that fit into her life. And she was obviously very privileged, and had money and all of that, and education and all of those sorts of things. But it did inspire me, actually. And it's really created an environment for me that I would love for more people to have access if they want to this thing. And women often don't, whether that's because in their head they don't have the access, or whether because society will frown upon them, or, because we're uncomfortable with our own bodies or other people's, or, there's all these reasons why women don't. I mean, the perfect world is if it's even, in terms of all the genders are more or less seeing sex workers more or less the same amounts of time, that would be the perfect world. So I found her very, very inspiring for that. But I think for me, I'm touched every day when somebody shows me their woman for the first time. No matter what that looks like, I get very, very, very touched at the beautifulness,
And you know what? Like, women are beautiful.
Yeah, so beautiful.
We
our bodies are beautiful. Humans are beautiful.
I know.
Everything. Yeah.
But, we're constantly bombarded in the media by these, size zero, little things that, even me raising a 12-year-old son, and the people that we have in our lives that, he doesn't see a picture of somebody, he sees a person, and it's so hard for quite often us to get beyond that as women because we have to fit into sometimes this, and once you rock that gorgeous body that you have
exactly
in your head and you take it out there in the world, it's
and I think often sex workers are used to help that process, be naked absolutely. In front of someone. Like when I said, when they show me their woman, in a sexy space, and that's often very vulnerable, or it's very powerful, or they're experimenting with DS, dominant submission dynamics, or their fetish, whatever that is, and in that moment and showing me that woman is absolutely incredible. And I'm so lucky that I get to witness that sometimes their first ever exposure, is with me. And it's I feel so privileged, so privileged.
Well, I tell you what, we have been so privileged to have you playing with us on the show. And we've had a message in from India.
Yeah.
Sebastian, the very beautiful boy, says, thank you so much for sharing your amazing story that people hardly think about. He's enjoyed the show, and he says, thank you so much for having you here. We have listeners all around the world here on Joy 94.9. Thank you so much for coming in and spending some time with us this evening. It's just been, you're an inspirational woman, and I can't wait to have you back in and play some more. We're going to have a listen to some quick messages, and we're going to head out with a song. Before Is Nothing Sacred comes on, on. You've been with Sammy and Helena in the wet spot on Joy 94.9. And don't forget next week, until next week, ladies, stay moist.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.